Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Rebel forces take Gaddafi's compound. A wildfire burns about 1,300 acres in central Oregon, and Portland police recover a stolen goat.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011. We begin our news day with this. Portland police recovered a stolen goat early this morning in southeast Portland. The goat was reported stolen around 4 a.m. and was found near southeast 18th Avenue and southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, according to police spokesman Lieutenant Robert King. The goat was placed in the back of a police car and driven away to its owner. Further details were not available.
What do you mean it was found between 18th and Hawthorne?
It was found near...
That's an intersection.
It says it was found near southeast 18th and
Hawthorne. Oh, I see. So is it wandering loose?
Yes.
Willy-nilly?
It was stolen.
Higgledy-piggledy?
I don't know.
Helter-skelter?
It was...
Rat-a-tat-tat?
It was reported... It was scampering merrily about, or it was perhaps being led around with a rope around its neck under duress. Bleeding. Help me. Help me.
Those are two different things, I think. One is scampering and one is being led by a rope. Was there someone found with it?
They don't say. There are many details that we're waiting to hear about this. I believe maybe in between the shows I will put in a call to the Portland police to find out if I can find out more about this story because we're lacking details.
Okay.
Frankly.
So they don't give any sort of explication as to why the goat was found there, how it turned up. Did somebody report it?
Someone reported the goat stolen around 4 a.m.
No, but did somebody report seeing the goat? How did they know the goat was there?
That I don't know.
What actual facts are in this story?
There was a goat.
Uh-huh.
Someone reported it stolen at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was found near southeast 18th and Hawthorne. It was jammed in the back of a police car and taken home.
Okay. So that's pretty much it. So somebody called the cops and said, goat.
Right.
Now the goat is gone.
Or what might have happened is someone reported the goat stolen. The police immediately jumped on the horn and told all the patrol cars, be on the lookout for a goat. An eagle-eyed police officer was driving down Hawthorne Boulevard and said, wait, there's a goat. That guy has a goat. Jumped out of the car and said, hey, you, buddy, is that your goat? The guy could show no papers to prove he was the owner of the goat.
Was there a guy?
I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Oh, I see.
I'm filling in all the details for myself because I'm lacking important information here.
Okay.
Then maybe the guy like wrestled with him a little bit. Although there's no mention of tasing or anything like that. But and then the guy just hightailed it.
I would be ill-advised to believe any section of this story, wouldn't I?
Well, no. I'm just making all of that part up.
No.
After that, well, I told you.
And the odds makers take a beating.
I told you at the beginning that I was just making that part up.
You mean like last year when we started the show? Oh, you mean in general. Okay, all right.
I'm very honest when I'm making things up.
Uh-huh. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011. Coming up later in the summer, you got your entertainment news, your science of the march, and so forth. Next time, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, if you want to download this program, you can do that as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes later on if you would like. Here is Don Taylor.
Rebel forces gained full control over Muammar Gaddafi's fortified Bab al-Azizia compound in Libya's capital today. The compound, which was heavily damaged by NATO airstrikes, had emerged as one of the last centers of government resistance.
Seems like fortified may have just sort of been figurative in this case. May have been a euphemism for not fortified all that heavily.
No, it was pretty well fortified. I was watching it on the news today. I mean, it was all made out of concrete and everything. But I mean, even if something's fortified, if you shoot at it with enough stuff, and if you have enough guys, eventually you can get in.
Thank you, George Patton.
Thank you. Yes.
If you got enough guys, you can typically get in. You dog faces.
Strategically, this means that Tripoli has fallen, said NBC's Richard Engel from inside the compound. Several rebels, in a show of contempt for the man who ruled their vast North African nation for more than 40 years, guess what they did? Guess what they did? What do they always do?
Found porn and whiskey.
Well, let's see. There was a big statue of Gaddafi.
Oh, is there a toppling?
Well, they cut off its head.
Oh.
And then they kicked it around like a soccer ball.
Well, this seems implausible.
And then I saw this on the news, actually.
You don't kick around a concrete head.
Well,
it seems like you'd hurt yourself.
They didn't really kick it around. A guy put it down on the ground.
Was the goat there?
Yes. And then the goat wandered through. Uh-huh. And they said, that's where the goat is. Follow the goat. Uh-huh. And that's how they discovered Gaddafi. He's actually a goat. No, they had the head on the ground, and one guy had his hand on it, and a bunch of guys were kicking it. And then there was a cameraman who was filming them kicking Gaddafi's bronze head.
Okay. Where is Gaddafi right now?
Nobody knows. No one has a clue.
Okay.
Not a clue.
Welcome to the news portion of Cascadia.fm's broadcast day. That is Legion of News. I'm going to hand you a couple Libya quotes right there, and then there's something else underneath that that's non-Libyan related, and then a few other things on the way. Yes?
I was going to say, also in the compound, in the courtyard of the compound, there's this very famous huge statue that Gaddafi did of an enormous bronze fist clutching an American fighter jet. And so the rebel guys were, like, clambering all over it and being up on top of it going, woo, woo, and dancing around on top of it.
That's not nearly as satisfying as the pictures that Hussein had made of himself, where it's just him larger than life. I mean, just huge, just like a Nebuchadnezzar size. And then he is surrounded by children who are throwing, like, in some cases, throwing petals at him, and in other cases, sort of demanding to sit on his lap.
Huh.
So that they can be, because apparently he was just sort of a swarthier, short-bearded Santa Claus, to the children of Iraq. Okay, so we've got a little Libya sound,
yes, we do.
I believe. And so this, what are the, because I've got some more coming as well, because it's constantly unfolding down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's just things happening left and right. What are the names of these cuts right here?
Well, this is Libya 1. Okay. This is the head of the rebel military council, Abdel Hakim Belhaj. Heard through a translator, here he's telling Al Jazeera that Tripoli is mostly under rebel control now.
All right.
Some other militia, Gaddafi militia or followers, they run like rats and they fled like rats. We are quite sure that now we can feel safe.
Okay, here's the great thing about this guy. He sounds just like the philosopher Magic Thighs in the audiobook version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when he's demanding that deep thought be turned off.
Belhaj, heard through the translator, told Al Jazeera that Libya still has a difficult road ahead.
The main fight has been won, and now we have to start another fight. Is to gather the people and build the country.
That's fantastic. I have to go dig that up somewhere. Where he's just
From your amalgamated thinking purses, sages, seers, and wizards.
He sounds exactly like that guy. I don't even know what he was saying. What was he saying here?
Fight number one is over, time for fight number two?
Yeah,
the rebels have got everything.
And now they need to find somebody else to bust up with?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
All right, awesome.
Okay. With a conflagration declaration from the governor. Ooh, conflagration declaration. More firefighters are battling a wildfire that has burned about 1,300 acres in central Oregon. A state fire marshal's management team is operating from a fire station in Madras. A spokesman named Justin DeReiter said that 150 firefighters are on the scene today with fire engines guarding about 15 or 20 homes that are being threatened. The Elk Fire broke out Monday afternoon near Madras and was spread by winds through grass and brush on private land and BLM property. DeReiter says the cause remains under investigation. Crews from Clackamas and Marion counties departed early this morning to assist with the blaze. No one has been injured so far. There's an unconfirmed report that an outbuilding burned, but no homes have been lost. DeReiter says crews hope to contain the fire by tonight. The Oregon Zoo is celebrating the birthday of its youngest elephant. Samudra is turning 3 years old. Visitors watched Sam enjoy his birthday cake and got to sign a giant birthday card. Zookeepers say the Asian elephant calf weighs nearly 3,000 pounds. He is the first third-generation elephant to be born in the United States.
It really would be embarrassing if it were we who forgot the elephant's birthday. Because, you know, they always remember. That's the thing. It's like even like unimportant holidays like Arbor Day, elephants tend to remember those things.
And then the elephant's just standing around going, so how are you doing today? Anything special going on today? And everyone's going, nope, think it's just a normal day. And the elephant's going, really? Because, you know.
I guess no one's getting me anything for my birthday.
He's got a gesturing at the calendar with his trunk.
Never mind. Okay.
New York State Supreme Court Justice Michael Obis today granted the prosecution's request to dismiss all criminal charges against former IMF chief Dominic Strauss-Kahn.
Bam!
Obis, however, said his order would be stayed until an appeals court decides whether a special prosecutor should be appointed. On Monday, the accuser's lawyer, Ken Thompson, made a last-ditch effort to keep the case going by filing paperwork asking that Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance be removed from the case. The Cyrus Vance? Obis denied the motion shortly before dismissing the case against Strauss-Kahn, but Thompson appealed, leading to Obis staying the dismissal. It was not immediately clear when an appeals court would rule on the issue. The Associated Press reports that crowds of protesters gathered outside the courtroom to voice their displeasure at the dismissal. The signs they carried included such messages as DSK treats women like property and put the rapist on trial, not the victim.
Okay.
The shouting could be heard from inside the courtroom, according to the Associated Press.
Yeah, did he respond with like a whole, suck it, jackasses? I'm leaving now. So, I mean,
yes, that was his sign. He was carrying a sign when he walked out that said, suck it, jackasses.
I think it was...
Only it was in French.
At what point did it become putting the victim on trial to point out that she's crazy? And also, apparently, a shakedown artist. I think that's actually just called... That's actually just called a counterproposal to the prosecution's argument.
And then it's called defending your client.
Yeah. Here she's on tape talking about the shaking the guy of all of his pocket change. I just, you know, I've got some additional sound that I will, that I'm going to try to find about Libya this morning, by the way. This is related to nothing else we were just talking about. But there was some Libya sound that I saw this morning that was fantastic. It was, I don't know who it was. I just caught a little tiny bit of it. But it appeared to be. It appeared to be some old hardline loyalist, not too dissimilar from our friend Baghdad Bob, who was denying that there were any U.S. troops in Iraq, even as we were like behind him in the camera frame, like knocking everything down. So there was a guy who was like that this morning, and he was on the TV. So I'm going to try to track down a little bit of that.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, if you want to take this with you on your mobile device, you can do that. You can take it with you at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today, Snuffwatch, Geekwatch. Another Snuffwatch, really?
Indeed, yes.
Snuffwatch, Geekwatch, Clergy Watch. That is all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be entertained for the low, low cost of just 32 cents per day. And it's 32 cents per day. That's like 32 cents per day. That is less than two-thirds of what's our gut? Sally Struthers is always trying to get you to send to those fly-covered kids. So, I mean, really, honestly.
I have more than that just lying on the floor of my car.
That's right. And, I mean, you're effectively homeless.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen your car.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What percentage of your home's possessions at any one time are in your car, do you think?
I don't know. A good 2%, I think.
Okay, just check.
Yeah.
Somebody just says, beat it with a shoe. Okay, well, consider it done, I guess.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Two Americans detained in Iran over 2 years have been convicted of spying and sentenced to 8 years in prison.
Iran?
Yes.
Iran so far away?
Yes.
Okay.
Joshua F. Fatal and Shane M. Bauer, two of our favorite people, by the way, because they're clever and smart. They were arrested in 2009, along with Sarah E. Shroud, because they were backpacking between Iran and Iraq. All three maintained that if they crossed the border into Iran, it was by mistake, but Iranian officials accused them of trying to infiltrate the country for espionage. Shroud was freed on $500,000 bail and returned home last year, but the two young men have remained in custody. The AP reports that the two men, both 28, have apparently been sentenced to 3 years each for illegal entry into the country and 5 years each for spying on behalf of the U.S.
Maybe you just said this, but have we figured out how they got into Iran? I mean, it's hard to sneak over the border into this country sometimes, and it's like we're not a de facto dictatorship. So I don't understand. Is there just nobody guarding that country at all, ever?
Well, I believe it's probably sort of like the California-Mexico border, for example. They don't have guys like at every single inch of the whole thing.
But I mean, Iran
there are places
is
you can go across.
I mean, they're kind of a hardline country. Like they don't. I mean, as I think they're finding out, like, in other words, when is the last time we imprisoned somebody for 9 years for being here illegally? Like, never. So, I mean, it seems like they take a stricter attitude towards this, so it surprises me that they would not, therefore, have the border more heavily guarded, especially if you're just some idiot Americans on foot who aren't, like, being stealthy about it. Like, they're just sort of wandering across.
Also, just asking a question, do we know for a fact that they really aren't spies?
Well, let's just assume they are.
Because we hear the story here in the U.S., and it's like these poor, innocent dumbasses who were just a couple of crazy kids who were hiking. They're both 28 years old. They're grown adult men. They're not teenagers. And
how old are they?
28.
Yeah.
And so they were 26 when this happened. And, you know, isn't this one of those things that spies do? They go places and their cover is, we're just dumbasses backpacking?
I think it's also a thing that spoiled rich people do. And they go, well, I'm going to backpack across Asia for a while and then really figure out what I'm going to do with my life. And then as a result, they go to places where they think that they're going to find some, you know, some Julia Roberts-esque deeper meaning. You know, they're going to be eating a bowl of rice and then suddenly have an insight into what their stupid lives are about.
Well, because they're going to actually be tried in court, some people in Iran are saying that that might open the door for the two to actually return home since they've already served 2 years in custody. And a conviction of illegal entry could deliver a sentence already served. So others say that they might be pardoned during Ramadan. So they may still be going home.
Okay.
You know, because it's Ramadan.
You know, it's like, I mean, I'm reluctant to rescue people who are just backpacking here. If they go so much as to, like, leave the trail a little bit. I mean, much less, like, backpacking through Tehran. Like, suck it, friend. That's your problem. It is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Hey, and there was an earthquake apparently this morning.
I know.
There was an earthquake
I have
in Virginia.
A little story here.
Did I give you the sound on that?
You did indeed.
All right, indeed. Okay, so we'll get to all that, and then there's the final two.
Oh, thank you. Look
right
at all
right there. You're awash in sound.
Thanks.
And this is all true. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, I get your science on the march. Also, entertainment news coming up in around 30 minutes from now. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm.
A 5.9 magnitude earthquake centered in Virginia forced evacuations of all the monuments on the National Mall in Washington and rattled nerves from Georgia to Martha's Vineyard, the Massachusetts island where President Barack Obama is currently vacationing. Coincidence? No injuries were immediately reported. The U.S. Geological Survey said the earthquake was half a mile deep and centered near Louisa, Virginia, around 40 miles northwest of Richmond. Shaking was felt at the White House and all over the East Coast, as far south as Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Parts of the Pentagon, White House, and Capitol were evacuated. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance was in the middle of a press conference.
Cyrus Vance,
about the dismissal of charges against Dominic Strauss-Kahn, of which we just spoke. When the room began shaking, reporters fled, and Vance was hustled out of the room.
Oh. Okay. I'm okay. I've been through earthquakes in Seattle.
Maybe it's him. Maybe he's just bad luck.
Two nuclear reactors at the North Anna Power Station in the same county as the epicenter were automatically taken offline by safety systems around the time of the earthquake. The Dominion-operated power plant is being run off of four emergency diesel generators, which are supplying power for critical safety equipment. The agency, Nuclear Regulatory Agency, is not immediately aware of any damage to the power plants at this time. And over at the Pentagon, a low rumbling built to the point the building was shaking. People in the Pentagon ran into the corridors. And there were shouts of, evacuate, evacuate.
Then they realized it was just Brett Butler walking downtown for lunch. Yeah, Brett Butler.
Brett Butler.
Yeah. Old school.
Yeah. In downtown Baltimore, the quake sent office workers into the streets where lampposts swayed slightly as they called family and friends to check in. And, of course, Twitter lit up with reports of the earthquake from people using the site up and down the U.S. eastern seaboard. Even Arianna Huffington tweeted, did you feel an earthquake in NY? It started in Richmond, VA. She's a writer.
Okay.
So earthquake. That happened. Speaking of earthy things, Hurricane Irene is whipping up the Dominican Republic with 100-mile-per-hour winds and heavy rain. Eric Blake of the National Hurricane Center says the coasts of North and South Carolina are the most likely to get hit by Irene at this
point. We're talking about something for late in the week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday type time frame. It's still several days away, and the air is going to be quite large.
You know, the thing about the Dominican Republic is it's that you have to really fully feel sorry for that country because they're just saddled with the worst neighbor in the history of the world, first of all. I mean, it's like living next to Haiti is just like living next to a sewer. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like you're just living next to some hillbillies twanging on top of a garbage dump. And you just kind of go, it's impossible to get anybody to come rent here. Our property values are just, we've really hit a bit of a ceiling here with the valuation of our homes. Maybe something will happen next year to make this better. And then along comes a hurricane and just pounds everything you owned into dust. So really, that is a Sisyphean task they have there in the DR.
The fellow from the National Hurricane Center says it may end up being the biggest storm to hit the U.S. in years.
You ain't nothing but...
Whoa, that's wrong. That's not supposed to be Elvis. Oh, you know, I think it's why. It's because it's a cut about, what's his name? Jerry Lieber.
Jerry Lieber.
It's supposed to be here's what was supposed to happen here. He was supposed to say something amusing about the last hurricane, which was?
Steve.
Hurricane Ike. And then I was going to make an amusing Ike Turner joke.
But you weren't going to play that song, though.
You know? No. I think I mislabeled a Jerry Lieber cut as a Hurricane Irene cut. See, and then if I really had been thinking forward about this whole thing, which I was not, I would have had some sort of a wind sound effect, like to simulate a hurricane, sort of a... And then it would have been me as Hurricane Ike, and I would have been saying, you know, I want you to have some cake! Have some cake! Or whatever. Hurricane Ike, sorry, baby. Hurricane Ike really love you. Or whatever. And then there would have in the foreground.
Yes.
All right.
So anyway, the
not enough Ike Turner humor in this world.
No, there's really not. So the storm system and the hurricane actually is threatening the long-awaited dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial on the National Mall. They're waiting for the outermost rain bands to hit the Florida beaches from Thursday into Friday morning and then move into the region by Sunday, which is the day that an estimated 245,000 people are supposed to be at the National Mall to dedicate the MLK Memorial.
My God, and the river's full of piranha!
A woman from the D.C. Host Committee, which has most of its events scheduled for Saturday, says, as Irene gets closer, we will probably see some contingency plans made to either move up or postpone the dedication a day.
God damn, people are dumb. All right, seriously, contingency plans. It's a hurricane. It just comes and destroys everything. Contingency plan.
What are we going to do if, you know, there's a hurricane?
And what's
move it indoors.
What's the event that they may have to have contingency plans for?
Well, the big thing is there's a whole lot of events going on that weekend, but the big one is the dedication of the great big Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial on the National Mall. So,
I mean, look, here's the thing. he's still going to be dead, like, next week.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm just saying, maybe...
And it's made out of, like, granite and stuff, so it'll still be there.
It'll be gone. I'm just saying. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly about it. All right, here's Don Taylor.
And in other weather news, a La Nina watch has been issued for the Northern Hemisphere by the National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center. For those of us here in Oregon, this could translate into an especially cold, rainy, and snowy winter, just like last year. The meteorologists are saying that the current weather trend appears to be pointing to a neutral La Nina pattern for the coming fall, followed by an even weaker pattern for winter. So basically they're saying that here, with our fall coming up, we're going to have another one of those winters that is very, very cold and rainy like last year.
What is, and they're saying that where?
Here in Oregon.
Except I don't think it really was very cold last year. I think last winter was very mild.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, it was wet in the sense that it's always wet here, but it wasn't very cold, just like it hasn't been very hot this summer.
Well, it says...
Because, you know, global warming or whatever.
Well, maybe we're misremembering it because it says, an especially cold, rainy, and snowy winter like last year. And
that's from Portland, Oregon?
They would not lie. Yes, it's Portland, Oregon.
You know, it didn't snow at all last year here, like, in the actual metro area. I mean, if you lived, like, someplace that was really high, but it didn't snow at all in the city.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's just... Is that even from this year?
Yeah. No,
you didn't pull that off the bottom of your shoe or something.
That was this morning.
There's no way in which that's accurate. That is entirely...
I suggest you take this up, then, with KGW meteorologist Nick Allard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the... This is the Snowlandia news desk.
Yes.
Okay. That literally had a bird put on it.
Yes.
All right. Okay. That's fantastic.
Yes.
And so forth. It's the, let's see, we're about, what, like 5 minutes away from Science of the New, Science of the March, or 30 well, seconds
30
or whenever?
Mere seconds from Science of the March. In fact, right now.
Okay.
Now. It's upon you.
At this actual moment.
Yes.
You're sure?
Right here.
Okay.
In my hand.
If you feel you're really up to it.
I'm excited. I'm pumped for science.
Somebody asks, is Legion of News broken today? What's going on? Not at all, sir. Here's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com, or you go online to Facebook and find them there as well. That is facebook.com/squireselectric. Or if you'd like, you can pick up the phone right now, this instant. You can find them by calling 503-252-1609. I know I've asked this before, but are we the only state that does this retarded breaking up of the area code thing?
No.
Like within the same?
No, we're not. Because
I mean, like LA does it, but
right.
I'm talking about a place that doesn't do it by dint of population requirement. We don't have enough people to justify that. It's just because we mismanaged our phone numbers.
I'm sure that it's happened elsewhere. I mean, what with the proliferation of cell phones everywhere, we can't be the only ones that we've had to do this.
But like in L.A., there aren't people who live next door to each other. It isn't like 310 and 213 are right next, like side by side or in the same house, right? I mean, in L.A., that actually, it's a regional thing because it's a big city. Whereas here, I mean, you could literally be across the street from a guy who has a different area code than you, or in fact, in the same house, I believe. I think that's just us that does that.
Mm-hmm.
I get really, really. I know this is such a stupid first world problem. I get so irritated by that having to say 503 all the time. Just annoys me. Just I wonder how many. If I'm going to be like a day and a half closer to death. You know, when you consider all the times I've had to say the area code to people.
I always get irritated that everyone still seems to feel they have to say 1-800. Why do you have to say the one? We all know to dial the one. You don't have to say one.
Well, and in point of fact, you don't actually have to dial the one.
No.
You can just skip that.
Right.
If you just dial 800, it still works.
Yeah.
So you can call Squires Electric at 1-503-252-1609, or you can go to facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can also find them at squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. It can make your life easier in terms of wiring and wires at your home or business. That means upgrade, it means installation, it means repair, it means all of those things. And they'll do it with a smile on their face and a spring of their step and a dip in their hip, making your day just a little bit easier and brighter. And they are 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
Girls have been known to reach sexual maturity at younger ages through the centuries, but what about their male counterparts? Researchers Joshua Goldstein at the Max Planck Institute in Germany believes he found a similar trend among maturing boys. In fact, he put forth that males may be influenced by the same environmental factors that shape the onset of menstruation in girls. Finding trends among girls is easy since there's a starting point to sexual maturity when a woman experiences her first menstrual cycle. For teen boys, however, a similar starting point isn't as clear. And this is where, they say, death comes in. Universally, male adolescents have experienced a rise of mortality toward the end of their teen years, a trend known as the accident hump. Whether it's from disease, violence, or mere accident, more male adolescents die during late adolescence than their female peers. Even more, this peak also matches the time when male teens produce the most testosterone. The idea is that more testosterone equates to more risk-taking and potentially violent behaviors, which in some instances results in accidental deaths. But since the mid-18th century, the accident hump has curiously occurred earlier and earlier in male adolescents. As such, an earlier accident hump may reflect a change in testosterone and thus when males are becoming sexually mature. The association between mortality and hormones seems indirect, and Goldstein acknowledges this in his paper, but it's the other relationship between teens' environment and biology that's more direct and may account for the changes. Historically, both sexes gained access to more food and grew up with fewer environmental pressures associated with illness as cities blossomed in the 18th century. It's been thought these environmental allowances freed up constraints that usually hindered reproducing at younger ages. So they've looked at 10-year periods of data from the Human Mortality Database from five European countries. They found the age at which males sexually mature to decrease by 2.4 months per decade. And through other indicators of maturity, including height, that they don't necessarily support maturing earlier, but all of the signs point to the fact that boys are also sexually maturing at younger ages as well as girls.
But when they say, see, I didn't hear any relative context there. In other words, when you say maturing earlier than what?
Well, they've known for a long time that women are hitting menstruation at younger and younger ages as time has gone on. Several decades ago, the mean age would have been, say, like 16 or something. Now it's more like 14 and a half or whatever. And those are just an example of, you know. But they didn't have any way to gauge boys because boys don't start a period. But they figured out when this peak of testosterone is and are finding that, sure enough, with each succeeding generation as humans go along, boys are also hitting sexual maturity earlier.
It seems like one of those things that they're overthinking. I mean, if really, honestly, if you're not able to look at a boy who's in puberty and a boy who's not and tell the difference, you shouldn't be allowed to be a scientist anymore. I mean, it just seems like, you know, as soon as he doesn't want to stand up in front of the class and answer a math problem, that's how you know. End. QED. Done. It just, it seems like they're straining to find something to establish there. Also, it's odd that apparently, like, girls are getting their period at, like, the age of 5 or something now, when they used to be just married off by the age of 13. They would just, be packed off and pumping out children by the time they hit high school.
Well, this is especially interesting because, I think, because one of the theories that has been floated a lot about girls maturing earlier...
Something to do with hormones and milk?
Yeah, hormones and soy. That there's so much soy in the various foods that we eat, and there's soy in a lot of baby formulas and children's foods and stuff, and it's used as filler in a lot of foods, and that the actual plant estrogens may be contributing to that. But something like this, if boys are maturing earlier as well, then it does stand to reason that it's actually broader environmental reasons than just, you know, the plant estrogens.
Maybe we can finally field a good team for the, basketball Olympics. You know, eventually. I'm just saying.
Our teen Olympic teams are going to be awesome because kids are going to be totally mature by the age of 12.
I'm saying
in a few years.
That's exactly what I'm saying. We go over it. You know, it's like that and the between that and the the Chinese mathletes. It's like we just keep getting crushed at everything. Our teenagers are not pulling their weight in terms of international sport competition.
Because they're all really horny by the time they're 8.
Exactly. Also, I do like the phrase accident hump.
Yeah, accident hump is a great concept. Google Street View lets users explore some pretty interesting places. You can tour the Colosseum, the Eiffel Tower, or Westminster Abbey. Soon, virtual travels will also be able to canoe down the Amazon and Rio Negro rivers in Brazil and explore surrounding communities. In an effort to promote awareness of one of the world's most biodiverse ecosystems, Google has partnered with the Sustainable Amazon Foundation to map the Amazon River, as well as the surrounding forests and river communities. Members of the Brazilian and U.S. Street View team, along with the Google Earth Outreach team, will mount their Street View camera trike to a boat as it floats downstream. They'll also use the trike to pedal along the dirt paths of communities near the rainforest. Doing so, they say, will give viewers a chance to experience what it's like to live and work in Amazonian communities.
And think of how many souls we'll be able to capture as we do that.
We're honored to work with the FAS on this project to bring the Amazon online for those who can't visit in person and help our partners with this, with the world, bring the world the unique stories of its inhabitants and the beauty of this place they call home, said the team leader, Karen Tuxen-Bettman. She wrote that on Google's Latlong blog. From the Jetsons on down to future car blogs on the emergency of smart cars, our concepts of future transportation have always had a very pod-like quality to them. For travelers at London's Heathrow Airport, that future is now. This summer, a new system of 21 driverless pod cars began regular service, ferrying passengers 1.2 miles from Terminal 5 to two stations in the airport's parking lot. The UltraPERT, Urban Light Transport Personal Rapid Transit, says the low capital, low operational costs, and low energy use will make the UltraPERT pods more beneficial than traditional transit systems. The company that owns Heathrow Airport, BAA, says that the pods can improve travel times by 60% and provide 40% in savings on operating costs. Passengers board the computer-controlled zero-emission pods at the terminal. At the station, pods stop offline, meaning they pull off to the side, allowing other pods to pass. With a capacity of six people, the pods then whisk passengers away on a two-lane fixed track.
This is a train.
No, they're...
It's on a fixed track. It's a train.
They're not a train because they're not connected to each other. They are six
people. It's a single-car train. It's on a fixed track, right?
Yes.
That's a train.
No, a train is a bunch of cars connected to each other.
So if you're telling me if I take a train that has 10 cars,
uh-huh,
and I disconnect them and put them all 2 feet apart, it's no longer a train?
No, if they're not connected to each other, they're not train. It's not a train.
It is a train car. That's a de facto train.
But when it is disconnected, it is no longer a train.
So you're telling me if just the engine were to drive by, and I were to call that a train,
No. You
would say that, colloquially speaking, that's wrong?
Yes, I would say that is a train engine.
Okay, colloquially speaking, though, it's still a train. If it's running on train tracks, it's a de facto train. Everybody except for you knows that. So
I'm
saying, how is this space-age technology? If it's running on a fixed track, in mm-hmm. other words, if it's operating in everything but size, if it's operating like a train, how is it new technology?
Well, first of all, it's not a train. And second of all, it's computer-controlled, and there's nobody driving it.
No. Wrong. There's nobody driving these trains that go by out here.
Okay.
You can tell because there are big signs saying trains have no operator.
And
so,
there are multiple cars that are connected to each other, thus making them
leaving
a train.
Leaving aside the issue of multiple cars, how is this space-age technology?
The fact that they look like pods, I guess, and they are driverless, and they...
But again, there's nothing new about any of that.
And they are zero emission.
It's electric.
Yes.
We've had electricity. We have electric trains. We've had electric trains in Japan for like 50 years.
Well, these are new to London's Heathrow Airport, and people are excited about them. And they're good for the environment, and they're new.
Okay.
And they look like pods. And they're on computers. They're run by computers, which makes them space age.
You could have just said nothing. It would have been easier.
None.
Okay.
They're a new thing.
They're not. Nothing new about them at all. Not in space age.
They're nothing.
Okay.
A new smart grenade, the iRobot 110 First Look, turns hand-to-hand combat into a game of high explosives hot potato. The new device is a part of a trend of lightweight, throwable robots that allow combat troops to peer over walls, climb stairs, and kill enemies from a distance. These devices were on display last week at the 2011 AUVSI conference in Washington, D.C., an event that showcased unmanned systems from miniature robotic stealth ships to hummingbird-shaped spy cameras. One military official said this new class of robots is already saving lives in Afghanistan and Iraq. An official with Robotic Systems Joint Products Office said, "They are giving us eyes-on information in places we can't get to. We're fighting an IED war," he said. "It's not so much combat as finding out where the explosives are. The downside of small, lightweight, throwable robots is that they can't carry as many sensor packages, have smaller batteries, and smaller range than the big rovers." The company that's working on them said that Their new smart grenade is already in use by South Korean troops. It's a 1.5-pound device that looks like a small plastic barbell with two rotating rubber treads connected by a plastic body that houses a radio transmitter, a small video camera, and explosive charge. The smart grenade fits inside a protective shell. The shells are launched by a standard rifle grenade and can travel up to 100 yards to reach the target. And then it lands, breaks from its shell, skitters across a cement floor, and then starts moving around on its little wheels. And it can, and then people can see what it's looking at through its camera. And then if they want to, they can blow stuff up.
Incidentally, Wikipedia says a train can consist of a single coach or a single car.
Really?
Yes.
Wikipedia is stupid.
Okay. I'll take that under advisement. I'll file your complaint with the International Knowing Stuff Council.
Exactly. All right. Thank you.
So I can get a fistful of robots that I can just throw at people?
Yeah.
At my enemies, perhaps?
Yeah.
Okay, like nanobees or something?
Yeah, you can awesome. throw it over a wall and it will spy on people for you. And then if you don't like them, it will blow them up.
That's awesome. The future is now.
Yes.
Can I get those like today? Can I get them from the Toy and Joy
sure.
Company?
Well, they're using them in South Korea. I'm sure you could get them online. They do cost between $10,000 and $15,000 each.
Well, okay.
So you'd want to make sure...
It seems like if you had one, you could use that to steal the rest, though.
There's also one called the Recon Scout Throwbot.
Throwbot?
Throwbot.
Okay.
Which is even lighter. It weighs just over a pound and is made of a titanium shell around a two-way radio control and HD video camera.
Awesome.
So there you go. And that's all of your science.
There's your science on the... What is it, Stroll? Canter?
Hike? Scamper? Scampering
science? Scamper. Brought to you by Squires Electric at squireselectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
John Huntsman said yesterday, that he'd be open to filling out the VP slot on the Republican ticket if Michelle Bachmann were to win the party's presidential nomination. Huntsman, who has so far struggled to break through the top tier of GOP presidential candidates, made the somewhat surprising admission Monday night during an interview with CNN's Piers Morgan. After Morgan then pointed out that his comments would likely be perceived as an admission of a possible defeat, Huntsman appeared to backtrack slightly, saying he gave a more or less hypothetical answer. As can be the case with television interviews, especially when politicians are concerned, it wasn't exactly clear whether the interviewer or the interviewee were on the same page. Still, Huntsman's comments made clear that he'd be hard-pressed to turn down the VP slot if offered, whether by Bachmann or another candidate. During the exchange with Morgan, Huntsman first laughingly ruled out joining an all-Mormon ticket with Mitt Romney, saying, "There'd be too many jokes about that. I can't imagine that at all." Morgan then asked, "What about a Tea Party candidate? If Michelle Bachmann continued to get real traction and she came to you and said, 'Look, you're the other part of the party here. Together we can make sweet music.'" Huntsman, that's what Piers Morgan said, by the way, sweet music.
Uh-huh.
Huntsman responded, "You know, if you love this country, you serve this country. Every time I've been asked to serve over different administrations, from Reagan to the two Bushes to President Obama, I have the same answer, and that is, if you love this country, you serve her. And so if you're in a position to better the country by bringing whatever background you have to bear, whatever experiences to use to fine-tune our future, I'll be the first person to sign up." Then after Morgan pointed out his comments were likely to make headlines, saying, "Hey, you want to be vice president instead of, you know, president, because it looks like, you know, you think you wouldn't win." Then he kind of backtracked and said that, you know, he really believed he'll be on top of the GOP poll later.
The thing about being vice president is that's a job that you don't really want. You know, a lot of times, because it's just a ticket to just becoming, I mean, it's like Joe Biden. It's just, I mean, really, unless you stand out somehow, or unless you happen to luck in being vice president for, like, the greatest presidential administration for the last 20 years.
Or if the guy dies.
It's just like a one-way road to Loserville a lot of the time. But it's like, but at the same time, you can't say no. If somebody says, "Would you like to be de facto second most powerful person in the world, a heartbeat away from the throne?" You kind of have to say, like... Yes, yeah. I guess I'll take that job. But at the same time, it's a stupid vice presidency. Also, how great would it be if Michelle Bachmann were president? Because then, like, that husband of hers would be on television all the time, and he would constantly be interviewed, and we would all have to just, you know, look at each other and acknowledge the truth.
I just always assume that most vice presidents really are like Ben Kingsley in Dave.
That, angry and embittered.
Just like, "Well, you know, I was a shoe salesman, and then I got on the city council, and then I thought I'd be in politics, and... then I started. Then I became vice president, and you're an ass.
Why did you send me to Africa?"
Yeah. Seven reptiles, including snakes up to 16 feet long, have been rescued from a home in northern Arizona. The reptiles are underweight, and because they haven't been properly fed, they are not happy. The staff at the Herpetological Society in North Scottsdale, Arizona, carefully handled the four pythons and small lizards surrendered Monday by a northern Arizona man whose collection, he says, grew out of control. All of the animals, now again, seven reptiles, including snakes up to 16 feet long, all of the animals were living inside his mobile home with his family.
Fantastic.
The owner had a particularly hard time giving up his albino Burmese python, which the Herpetological Society staff said is vastly underweight and needs medical help.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
Something wrong with my python. He's a little limp.
My albino python seems to require attention. Give me a nurse.
Negotiations with the hoarder wasn't easy, but after 4 hours of persuasion, the hoarder gave up his four biggest snakes. The hoarder did, however, keep dozens more at home in his mobile home.
Wait, so he had... So how many were there total? They didn't take them all away.
They took his seven biggest snakes and lizards.
Are these all legal to own then?
Apparently so. I think he just had...
There were just some that were malnourished.
Too
few mice to go around.
Not enough mice in the mobile home.
All right. Surprised he still had any kids left at this point.
The few snakes and lizards that made it out have already received medical care. And the staff is defrosting giant rabbits to feed them on Tuesday.
I would pay any amount to see that. Not just the feeding, but the actual defrosting as well.
Well, thaw out some giant rats.
Life sucks if you're a rabbit, really, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, rabbits constantly, you know, they're not as bad as being a white mouse, but the rabbits seem to be getting the short end of the stick, you know, a lot, really. All right, here's Don Taylor.
The president of ratings agency Standard & Poor's is stepping down. Credit strategist Noel Hebert of Mitsubishi USA says it's hard to ignore that this comes soon after S&P downgraded the United States credit rating.
The timing and the way it was communicated, I think, will allow people that want to be suspicious to be suspicious.
Hebert thinks it looks like Devin Sharma is being forced out the door.
It does strike me as a little bit peculiar that it follows so closely on the heels of the downgrade.
So he has no actual facts or information to share. He knows nothing.
Maybe he'd like a news show somewhere.
Goodness.
Here's Don Taylor. It is 12:46, by the way, Pacific time. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour. Geek Watch, Clergy Watch, Snuff Watch, and more. You've got your entertainment news on the way in them your moments. Don't forget, if you want to take this program with you in your mobile device, you can do that. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. And you can do the same thing with the Rick Emerson radio program at mobile.rickemersonshow.com.
I do want to share, by the way, I received an email from listener Roger.
Hold on. Let me just, before they said that, actually, I gave our URL incorrectly.
Oh.
So for Cascadia, it is mobile.cascadia.fm. For the Rick Emerson Show, just mobile.rickemerson.com.
Listener Roger emails to tell me that we took the high road. We did that entire goat story without a kidnapping joke.
Well, we don't traffic in inanity, sir.
So, I mean, really, he's proud of us.
How
for,
little you must think of us to be surprised by that.
Being up here. Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for what day?
Tuesday.
That's right. For Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011.
I have an audio clip in the Dropbox for you, by the way, if you'll play this when I get to it.
All right, and then I've got some Letterman stuff as
well. Oh, well, that's what mine is.
Really?
So
do you have three of them?
No, I only had one.
Ha-ha! Your face, Don
Never
Taylor.
Never mind, then.
There's your there's three Letterman cuts for you there.
Then you don't need mine.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm sure it's probably the same one. First, though, the latest talk of the town, Ben Affleck and his wife Jennifer Garner will welcome their third big-headed, giant-eared child. The couple, who released a statement saying they're thrilled about the news, have two other children, Violet, 5, and Serafina, 2. Affleck and Garner have been married since 2005. Scrubs star Donald Faison is engaged to girlfriend Casey Cobb. Faison tweeted on Friday night, "If you like it, then you better put a ring on it. Beyonce." Cobb, one of Jessica Simpson's friends who appeared on Newlyweds and The Price of Beauty, replied, "If she likes it, then she better say yes." Did he actually... Was that them announcing it, or was that him proposing to her on Twitter?
I don't know. I wish someone would come here and beat me to death with a shovel right now.
Jesus. Mark Wahlberg has landed a new gig endorsing Privacy. PRVCY. a rep for the fashion label exclusively told E! News, privacy. The brand picked up the 40-year-old star and one-time underwear model because of his amazing record of boosting the Calvin Klein brand, and expects the actor's powerhouse image to do the same for privacy. Wahlberg will begin by promoting...
I'm sorry, for what?
It's I guess it's pronounced privacy, but it's all capitals, and it's P-R-V-C-Y.
And it's a...
underwear line.
Okay. You would think he would stay away from advertising underwear at this point, because he worked so hard to... He worked so hard to differentiate himself from that Mark Wahlberg,
yeah.
You know, from that era of his career.
Well, apparently he will probably not actually be modeling the underwear. The company says his principal role will be brand ambassador rather than model. But more details will be revealed this week by the company at the Magic Marketplace Fashion Convention in Las Vegas. And Wahlberg is scheduled to make a surprise appearance at their booth there.
Does it actually say that?
Yes.
All right. Is it going to be live on tape delay?
It's going to be a surprise.
All right.
So don't tell anybody. Amy Winehouse had no illegal drugs in her system when she died, according to an autopsy, but it is still unclear what killed her. The family said in a statement that toxicology tests showed alcohol was present in the singer's body, but it hasn't yet been determined if it contributed to her death. The 27-year-old singer, who battled drug and alcohol addiction for years, was found dead in her London home on July 23rd, and an initial postmortem failed to determine the cause of death. The family is awaiting the outcome of an inquest that is due to begin in October.
I think we can call that a cumulative drug ingestion. I think that may be the thing where your body if you're Amy Winehouse and your brain sees you reaching, for the Coke vial or something, it probably just goes, oh, God. And it just sort of gets a preemptive, you know, just like it figures like, look, we're going to be dead in a day anyway. We must just get it over with now.
Just build a clot right now.
Seriously, just start the shutdown.
In his first broadcast since, an internet jihadist website posted death threats against him. The host of CBS's Late Show with David Letterman fired back with some one-liners on Monday night. Here is an example.
State Department authorities are looking into this. They're not taking this lightly. They're looking into it. They're questioning. They're interrogating. There's an electronic trail there. But everybody knows it's Leno.
The writer who posted the death threat last week was upset by Letterman jokes about Osama bin Laden and another al-Qaeda leader killed in Pakistan, according to Site Intelligence Group, which monitors and translates online activity. Here is more of Letterman's remarks.
Great audiences, night in and night out, but tonight especially. It means a lot to me. Tonight, you people are more, to me, honestly, more than an audience. Tonight, you're more like a human shield.
Oh! Zam!
And this.
I'm so sorry. I'm a little late coming out. Backstage, I was talking to the guy from CBS. We were going through the CBS life insurance policy to see if I was covered for jihad.
Oh. Fantastic. See, and the thing, you know, the thing about that is I don't know. I think that we are in an age when threats like that are not taken nearly as lightly as they used to be. So, I mean, good on Letterman for not blinking in the face of things.
Threateningness.
Menace.
Yes. Also, his top 10 list was the top 10 thoughts that went through my mind after hearing about the threat, and included on the list are number 7, save me, Oprah. Number 5, and here I thought nobody watched the show. Number 4, how can someone be so angry at a time when Kim Kardashian is so happy? And number 1, oh my God, they canceled the George Lopez show.
Excellent. So, well done, David Letterman. It is 12:52 Pacific time. You are listening to Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Girls Gone Wild mastermind Joe Francis turned himself into custody in Mar Vista, California late Monday after yet another warrant was issued for his arrest. He was booked on a misdemeanor false imprisonment charge. No word what the warrant stems from, but he was subsequently released on posting $50,000 bail. A rep was not available for comment this morning. Francis amicably split last December with his entertainment reporter wife, Christina McGlardy, after less than 2 months of marriage, turned up without a date at Kim Kardashian's wedding on Saturday night. And then, for some reason there was a custody warrant for his arrest, and he turned himself in and then was released on bail.
You know, if you're that guy, if you're Joe Francis, if you're the Girls Gone Wild creator and mastermind and maven and guru and all, Why would you do anything other than just sitting at home waiting for checks to arrive every month? I mean, why would you even... I would never even leave the house. I would just have just pallets of Cheese Whiz brought to me day after day after day. And then I would just have, I don't know, you just have whatever else you require. Be it, let's say, you know, applets and cotlets or perhaps cheerleaders. Just airdropped in. And it's like you couldn't even get me off the couch. I mean, you know, much less out to cause any sort of mischief that requires me being arrested. No. I just don't, you know.
There doesn't seem much reason for it.
Seems to be the, you know, that is the American dream, is that you create Girls Gone Wild and then you never have to do anything ever again. Much less threaten some guy or imprison somebody, because you got people to do that for you. And this would be like, I think, at least the third time he's been arrested, and if he gets convicted, the second time he's gone to jail.
Yeah.
That just seems to defeat the whole purpose, you know? Now what are you going to do?
That's all the entertainment.
All right, there's your entertainment news for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011. It is 12:54. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, we do have a wacky dog story.
All right, so this is, let's see.
Your
amusing animal news for Tuesday.
John Ross Jewelers in Albany, Georgia, is well known in town for their dogs. Tiffany and Velvet roamed the shop for years and appeared in commercials. After their passing, their dog, Honey Bun, now greets customers for owners Chuck and Ann Roberts. Customers sometimes hide treats in their purses for Honey Bun, which the dog appreciates. But Honey Bun's taste became a little more expensive recently. Roberts said, "A customer came in and I jumped up out of my chair and came out to wait on him, and I left the chair where Honey Bun could jump up on the chair and get on the desk. On the desk were dog treats, pens, and four packs of loose diamonds, about a carat each, to set in diamond earrings. When Roberts returned, only three packs of diamonds remained, and an empty pouch was lying on the floor. Honey Bun was whisked to the vet. Carbon doesn't show up on an x-ray, but two blank spots confirmed Honey Bun had eaten the diamonds. It only took a day, but they found another surprise. The next afternoon, sure enough, the earring back was recovered as well as the two diamonds."
When they say recovered, Dawn,
they mean it was in the dog's poo.
Well, that's why you've got help, though.
Right. "I haven't scolded him to this day, and I won't," said Roberts. "It's my fault for leaving the chair there." It taught Roberts a valuable lesson. He's now very cautious about where he leaves his desk chair, and they're keeping a closer eye on Honey Bun around the precious gems. Incidentally, the diamonds Honey Bun chose to eat weren't the best pair of diamonds, and they were cleaned up and sent back to the supplier.
I think the lesson we learn here is that dogs are deeply, deeply stupid.
Yeah.
It's not even like diamonds taste like anything that you might want to eat.
Well, this is also like a Pomeranian, who are especially like small-brained dogs.
Well, and also just probably hateful in some way.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. So there's your amusing dog story for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2011. Excellent. Here's Don Taylor. We got 90 seconds.
Okay, a garbage truck in Houston caught fire on the freeway and created a major traffic jam this morning. Just before 9 a.m., a garbage truck that was eastbound on the East X Freeway at Beltway and North caught fire. The truck was able to get over to the shoulder, but the fire department blocked all eastbound lanes for nearly 20 minutes. Officials finally opened one lane, allowing some traffic to squeeze past the incident. They continued to block the other two lanes of the stretch, making for a slow commute to drivers this morning because of the garbage truck that was on fire in Houston.
Okay.
Not a very interesting story for ending the show, really.
And finally today.
Yeah. Also, viewer Joey Dominguez sent Action 7 News in Bernalillo, New Mexico, a picture of a tree across from his house that looked like Jesus. He said it had an image of Jesus Christ wearing a robe with his arms crossed in front. Lorenzo Garul said his cousin was the first to see the divinity in the tree. He looked into the tree, and in the tree you could see a glowing image of what we believe is our Lord. So my cousin called us, and we all came. Since Friday, handfuls of people have been coming to the tree to see it for themselves. Now there are candles and a crucifix made of branches of the tree. Ronald Perez said, "It brings the whole community together. It sure has, you know, the religious faith. It brings everybody together."
What could go wrong? Here's the thing I have faith in, that if a story involves people filling a tree with candles, we're going to get another story within a week or so.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
just a guess. Also, any story that begins with, "And then my cousin called me up and he said, you got to see this." Anytime your cousin calls you to come look at something.
No, really, it's Jesus. He's in the tree. Honestly, okay.
The hell with it. All right, there you go. We'll just do that. There you go. And with that, we end this, another episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. The news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. And we will see you again tomorrow at noon. That is Wednesday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, don't forget, you can always get this as an encore, as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legiononews.com or via iTunes. We'll see you tomorrow at noon. Have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?